Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're back in the home studio after spending some time in Annapolis with the Maryland Hospital Association and at Fadley's with Governor Martin O'Malley to spotlight the incredibly large field. It's a good thing Baltimore Positive has banned.
I'm telling you.
7th District congressional race. The election will be held on February the 4th. There's another election on the 28th, another one in November. It's very sticky, but Harry Spikes knows all of the ins and outs. He's one of many in a crowded field. And first off, Harry, welcome in the Baltimore Positive. And I know the time is getting short as we get up. We all had purple fever around here with Ravens fever. Now we can focus on what's important and who's going to replace Elijah Cummings down in D.C. Good day to you, Harry. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. It's really such an honor to be on your show, and you guys are so much fun. So I really was looking forward to it.
Thank you. Harry, yeah. you know, we're going to have a lot of the candidates on. I was thinking today, you have one of the certainly closest, most compelling relationships with the gentleman I call a giant of a man, Elijah Cummings. You've worked with the congressman for a long time. Folks who are listening for the first time who don't know who Harry Spikes is, I wonder if you'd just give us a little of your background and then talk a little bit about your relationship with Elijah and what that meant to you.
Thank you, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Harry Spikes. I live in the Oliver community. I live in Baltimore for 20 years. I'm a graduate of Morgan State University. After graduating, I worked at the Library of Congress as a writer for CRS, and I was cutting my mama's grass one day, and I got a call from my professor, and he said, Harry, there's a gentleman in Congress by the name of Congressman Cummings. He's looking for a man to work, looking for a person to work on housing and Social Security. I applied for the job. I thought my interview was going to be with my chief of staff or somebody else. It ended up being the congressman himself. And it was the longest interview of my life. It was 2 hours long, and this guy was like hardcore. I mean, if anybody remembers the congressman, he threw all type of punches, never held anything back. And after the interview, he didn't call me for 8 months. I thought I didn't get a job.
Yo, you thought you failed the test.
Right, right.
Yeah, I thought I failed the Elijah test. And then 2004, 3 days before Thanksgiving, he calls me. He says, son, I'd like you to join my staff. And that, my brothers, was 15 years ago. I started out as a special assistant, then a staff assistant, then a deputy district director, then district director. And as district director and deputy district director, I managed all his staff. I managed all his offices. I managed all of the programs that we had in the community, how to pay for college, the job fair, the congressional art competition, you name it. And while doing that, too, I also was vice president of a homeless shelter called the Community Assistance Network, where I help people get from inefficiency to self-sufficiency who are dealing with homelessness. So the hardest years of my life have been the last 3 years because, of course, my leader, my friend, got severely sick. But that is what you all see where the bond between him and I actually grew, because I was helping him with things for this district that he was very passionate about while he was still in the hospital. And that's why I tell people there's no learning curve here for me. At all, I know the district. I work well with people. I know every constituent service that has passed through our office because I had to sign every letter that went out. So I want to let you all know that you all are getting a genuine leader. I genuinely care, and that's why I tell folks that my mission is simple, continue the mission, and my acronym for my name is very simple. SPIKE stands for Supporting People in Kindness and Engineering Sustainability, because like the congressman, I told him we need to do a great job of making sure we put things in place and move on to the next issue.
Boy, it's such a crowded field, right? I mean, just a lot of people interested in this, and obviously a lot of folks like yourself that had touched Elijah or a part of his family or a part of his group, as well as a lot of other people that, I don't say being opportunistic, I mean, it's it's a chance to go serve people, but there are a lot of people interested in this job, right?
Yes, sir. Well, let me tell you this. First of all, the people running for this race are great people. I know that they want to do great jobs. What distinguishes me from them is very simple. I'm already doing the work that people say they love. I tell people this all the time. If you love the congressman so much and all the great work that he did, who do you think did it? I did it. We did it. The staff did it. There's no need for anyone to get someone else so we can start all over. And I tell people that in an honest and sincere way. Also, I'm supported by his daughters. His daughters would not have supported me if they didn't believe in me and saw all the work I did with him for the last 15 years.
Harry, I was going to ask you about that. That certainly raised eyebrows. And, you know, phones are ringing off the hook and text messages are going and said, boy, did you see where Elijah's daughters came out in an op-ed and they supported Harry? Did you know they were going to write that op-ed, Harry?
The answer is no. The answer is no. When I ran for when I decided to run, I called his brothers, his sisters to ask for their blessing. I called them, and so many of them told me yes. And then the day I announced, his daughters decided to be in the boxing ring with me. If you go on my website, you'll see where I announced, and his daughters were in the boxing ring with me. And that blew my mind. After that, I did not know they were going to stop it, and because that really showed everyone this is the reason why we support Harry. So for me, that's an honor and a blessing, especially to the work that I did with their father.
Harry, one of the things, Nestor and I have given each one of the candidates a little test. We put our school hats back on. Tell folks, or tell us, where's the 7th District of Maryland?
Sure. So I want people to look at Baltimore City and take 70% of Baltimore City we do have, but take the left side of Baltimore City where you see the county, as many people know, the Baltimore County surrounds Baltimore City.
Big horseshoe, I tell people.
My man, you got it. So half of the horseshoe to the west side we have. And then we have a lot of Howard County. But if you go to the Wolfhead, past Timonium, we have that area as well, which is a lot of constituents up there. Remember, they redistricted years ago. But we have that too. And that consists of over 670,000 constituents. That's the number.
How many voters? How many voters, Harry?
Well, you know, the voters, it varies from primary to general, and of course in this special election. You have over 700,000 registered voters, but as far as how many people come out, it varies.
Well, we're reminding people because it's an unusual, this is really a cycle that's unusual.
Yeah, people are going to have a hard enough time getting out April 28th, I mean, trying to get them out February 4th. We got to get this going here.
February 4th, right. No early vote. And one of the things, you know, when Nestor and I started this, it's all about positive energy and getting people to take ownership and move forward. And it's going to be real easy on a dreary February day, particularly if it's cold and rainy or cold and snowy, to let somebody else worry about democracy. We can't do that. We got to get people involved.
One of your competitors we had on said politics is not a spectator sport. And I thought that was one, you know, that's why we're all doing this, and that's probably why there's so many of you running. And we should be talking more about this. We certainly talked a lot about Elijah in the aftermath of losing him a couple of months ago, right?
Yeah, we are. Well, let me share this with you all. As I visit families and knock on doors, one thing that I have found myself doing, I'm making sure that I educate my constituents. Because we have a lot of people that really, they don't know what a congressman does. And there's a lot of people that do. And I think that has happened because of three things. We've had a lot of violence in our city. We've had a lot of job loss in our city and in Baltimore County and Howard County. We've had a lot of opioid addictions and deaths and suicide rates. So when you mix all that up, people are saying, okay, with our top leaders that we see all the time, what are you all doing? So I want to say, it's not a spectator sport. What politics is how we define the best way people can live. That's it. I mean, once you start getting into the whole who's popular and who knows who, the answer is, can they do the work? And that's what I'm trying to convey to my constituency. I'm making it very simple. You don't have to have a learning curve for me, but I want them also to know the type of leader that they're getting. There's a lot of things that the congressman didn't finish because he died that I know about. For example, y'all, he and I had a conversation 2 years ago where I said, Congress, we need to do a better job of veteran housing. Because when I worked at the shelter and I was working in the district and we had men and women come through who were homeless, we found out they were veterans, it was hard for them to get housing. And I know that's something that he and I were passionate about, but he didn't get a chance to touch it because he died. We worked on the Mayor's Office of African-American Male Engagement, where we actually were reconnecting men and women to their families to help them get jobs and get them off the street. Now, we knew that that wasn't a federal thing that a congressman does. But he and I were so passionate about it, I brought that to him. I said, Congressman, there's already people in your district doing this. And he's the one that brought the mayor and Brandon Scott and other people together. So I'm sharing that with you.
Harry, you're singing Nestor's tune. Anybody that's a regular listener on Baltimore Positive has heard Nestor talk about the frustration that the same homeless person has been on his corner for how many years now?
Well, Harry, you know, I live at the Inner Harbor, and we've had the same man on the same corner. I moved in the summer of 2003. It's now the spring of 2020. He was there a couple days ago. Didn't see him today, but he's there most days. He lives there in the summer and shows up in the winter. I wrote a piece in a B magazine thing 15 years ago about the difference between homelessness and panhandling, where it felt like people came down on buses and just panhandled and got back on a bus and went back to wherever they lived. The homelessness problem, which I've seen in San Francisco and I've seen in other places, it's clear it's an issue here. I wish I understood more about it, right? So I come to someone like you. I've had various people on here over the last 5 years doing all sorts of charity work when there's an event, when there's some spotlight, when there's some giving to be done, when there's a helping up mission or a place like that where I can help. I've tried to do that. But the homelessness part for someone like you out there in the trenches, what should a guy like me know as a taxpayer in the city about homelessness that I don't know, that I don't understand?
Thank you. First, thank you for that. This is what you need to know. Number one, many of these shelters, including the one that I work with, we have what's called rapid rehousing specialists, where we do more than just give you a plate of food when you come in and a blanket. We sit down with you. We see what issues you had via addiction, via dealing with and connecting back with your family, and also do you have a job or if you have a income such as Social Security, disability, or retirement.
Are there always mental health issues? I mean, it just feels to me if you've been living that way for any for a night, if Don and I had to go do it tonight, we would wake up different tomorrow. I would. I always think it used to anger me. It used to upset me, and I don't give a dollar. And then we have squeegee boys. Things happen on the corners, but more than that, I think at the heart, I would say there's something really wrong with that person, and who's going to care? Who's going to care about that person's mind? Because that to me, they're intertwined. They have to be intertwined, right?
Right, right. And I'm going to tell you this: there's a lot of people that I have met who, when they became homeless, they lost their mind. They weren't always like that. And so I share that because on our staff and in other homeless shelters and other homeless facilities, such as our Daily Bread, you actually have staff that were homeless who are now staff. And what we've utilized is it takes a warrior to help a warrior. And that's what you see in our community. A lot of people, they are afraid to touch the homeless. They are afraid to communicate with the homeless. Our model has been, hold on, let's get the people who were homeless, who went from inefficiency to self-sufficiency, and get them back in the community. So to answer your question, that's how you engage. You got a lot of PhD talk, but you don't have a lot of on-the-ground conversation and work. And so what we pride ourselves on is making sure we do that. So for you to say, hey, Harry, what do I need to know? Those are the things that you need to know, that there are a lot of programs that are working. But people like to think that this homeless piece, we get you in a week and your whole life is together. No, we've got homeless folks we've been working with for 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Harry, 17 years I've seen this man, and I don't know whether he really has a home. I thought he did for a long time. Lately, I don't. He's so aggressive and so nasty that I don't, you know, I roll the window up. I mean, I just do, you know, after 17 years. But I wonder, how is he still there? You know, and I blame the mayor, right? I can blame my congressman. I can blame I can blame anybody, but he's still on the corner right now. What do we do about that on a 25-degree day?
Well, let me tell you this. Since you and I are talking about a federal race, let me tell you how a congressman can help. So you and I have an opportunity to educate our community.
So I call Elijah or call you next month, right?
All right, here we go. Walk us through it.
Right. Well, here we go. First of all, HUD has a program called the Continuum of Care, in which they come to cities, Baltimore being included, and they say, hey, homeless care providers, let me add up all the numbers of the people that you service per year and the services that you provide. HUD then takes that number, goes to the mayor, and they allow the mayor to get that number together. The mayor then works with Baltimore City HUD and then shoots that data to HUD in D.C., federal HUD. What does a congressman do? When I see that data and I say, there's more homeless people in Baltimore than there are in Delaware. I need to make sure that I do what? Go to Maxine Waters, who deals with finances and deals with HUD and all that, say, Congresswoman Maxine, I got this data. It has come to me that we need to put a little more money and allocation towards homelessness services because our numbers have gone up in different areas. Can we work in Congress to make this better? That's what a congressman is supposed to do. Once that money gets here, people like Governor Hogan, people like Jack Young, they then disseminate those funds so those funds are able to help out the people in Maryland. That's what a congressman does. So if anyone asks me, hey, Harry, what can we do? Hold on. I'm the one to make sure the laws get here together, and I'm also the one to make sure that the money gets here so we got the great people to do the work.
Harry, what I hear you saying, I'm going to give you a few minutes to talk about a couple of the other major issues, but what I hear you saying, that what you want one of your messages to voters, as Nestor and I go through this afternoon, you're saying, I don't need any training wheels. I'm here. I'm doing the job. It's not a job for on the job training. I'm ready to go.
Let me tell you, if I had a commercial, you'd be in it. Just because you said it, man. Just because you said it. I mean, I say that because I'm trying to let the community know that I'm your champion. There's nothing else that needs to happen here with me learning this work. What needs to happen is I need to be one of the instruments of change in our congressional delegation to push the agenda, especially from a younger perspective. I have worked with people for years, and I can honestly tell you some of the things that I've been doing in my life with the Congress, while I was working with them, a lot of my folks don't know and haven't done. And I pride myself on that because I've always wanted to be at one with the community because I learned that those are the people that made the congressman's office great. I mean, how many people came to us with non-congressional issues that because we knew the leaders in the community, we were able to help them. And then because they shared with us their struggle, the congressman was able to make better decisions in D.C. In D.C., when people hear the word representative, hear this, y'all. When they hear the word representative, they have to realize that your representative is representing the issues that they're dealing with in their districts. For example, you got men and women in Iowa who may be dealing with coal mining, or Washington State dealing with coal mining. Their representative, he's in D.C. talking about that. Well, guess what Harry Spike is doing? I'm talking about suicide rates in Howard County. I'm talking about opioid addiction in Baltimore County, Howard County.
Yeah, let's jump off on that, Harry. I want to take a look at those two issues. I want you to talk about, because sometimes they're related, I want you to talk about health care and opioids. I mean, major issues for any congressional candidate. What kind of health care system should we have? And I know opioids were a passion for the congressman. Mm-hmm. So those two issues, tell me what you're going to be doing as a congressman.
Well, number one, I want to make sure that health care is affordable for everyone. My premise for that is because the congressman would not have lived as long as he had lived had he not had health care that was affordable. On top of that, he went to the same hospitals that you and I went to get help and health care. And so it wasn't one of those situations where because he was a congressman, he went to some duper-duper, super-duper private hospital that no one knew about. No, he was a man of the people, and he went to the people's hospital. I want to make sure that folks have that. Now, hear this. When people start talking about health care for all, the problem with this is in Congress, and no one has figured it out, is that you have people in America that like the health care that their person they work for provides. They pay into it. They don't want the public option. They like that they have the opportunity to choose. We in Congress have to figure that out. As a congressman, I also want to let people know they need to read about some of these health care plans. Read about Bernie Sanders' plan or Jay Paul's plan, or read people's perspectives on what should be included, like dental policies that need to be put in there.
Just to be clear, then, you're on board with a Sanders type Medicare for All program, or you're on board with a public option phase it in program?
With a phase it in, I want everyone to be able to have affordable health care. But I want them also to be able, because you have people in Baltimore County, Baltimore City, Howard County, they still want the right to choose. We have to make sure that it's affordable if you have the right to choose. Because as it stands now, the premiums are too high, guys. The premiums are too high for some people. And you have people saying, hold on, I want to be able to choose. So I want health care for all. I've said it publicly. I've said it privately. I want health care for all.
Harry Spikes is running for election to the U.S. House to represent Maryland's 7th Congressional District. He's on the ballot. It's February the 4th. Baltimore Positive, we are featuring as many of the congressional candidates as we can in sort of a short window and a short track. And there's lots of things in the aftermath of losing Elijah. For you stepping up in the aftermath of Elijah dying, and obviously Don had a situation with Kevin Kamenetz, and he's actually got the Kevin Kamenetz pen here, so I want to feature that for a minute.
I do.
But, you know, Don, you stepped in, and, you know, obviously for you, Harry, we were doing the work. Boy, there's a cooling off period. I didn't talk to Don for a couple of weeks after he lost Kevin. Then he's running the county all of a sudden. The work that Elijah was doing, I'm assuming you're still full step in line with having done this work for the last 10, 12, 15 weeks, however long it's been at this point. Some thoughts about you sort of tallying off in the aftermath on a personal loss. I can't imagine what Elijah meant to you to sort of dust off and come back and want to do this on a short track.
Well, thank you for that. I didn't go to his gravesite for 2 weeks. I couldn't do it. When he died, I couldn't even mourn because, remember this, we had a program the following week at Morgan State University. Speaker Pelosi had a lying in state for him in D.C. And then we had the funeral at New Psalmist the following day. So myself and my chief of staff, we were working so hard to make sure the programs were together. It wasn't, and then right after the funeral, I went home. I couldn't drive behind the casket. I couldn't. And I couldn't see him go into the grave. And I went privately to the gravesite and just talked to him. And even then, guys, it didn't feel, it felt like he was still there because I was so close to him. And then I kind of felt like, like Apollo Creed. I was standing on the grave, standing next to his grave, just talking to him like it was nothing. Then his parents are buried next to him, so I was talking to them as well. So for me, it's hard. I think what has been my solace in this is because I'm running now, I get to articulate my vision and also articulate to people what he gave me. And that has been my way to mourn. And it's been very therapeutic for me. I also want to thank you, Don, because what you didn't know is that I talked to Kevin Kamenetz years ago and told him that we needed a shelter in Baltimore County. And he's the reason why we have two brand new shelters in Baltimore County.
Oh, the East Side and West Side. They're proud to tribute, you know. Kevin and Nestor's heard me say this. Kevin, not many people ever quote Hubert Humphrey, and Kevin right. loved Hubert Humphrey, and he loved to quote him, particularly Humphrey's quote about that society, and Nestor talks about this all the time, will be judged by how we treat the most vulnerable among us.
And that was
Kevin's driving force. Harry, before we let you go, what's federal government's role in helping us address this awful opioid addiction issue?
Well, I believe that we have to do a great job of helping folks transition from not having to use opioids to manage pain. I'm so for the science that will come that will not allow a person to be addicted to opioids, but will allow them to transition and move forward. I think the government should also do a better job. When I was working with the Congress and I learned that a lot of these drugs are coming from China and overseas, and we need to have a serious conversation with them to say, okay, how are you all manufacturing these? Do you have alternatives? And can we do a better job of finding better sciences to do that? Because, you know, I know people are in it for business, but if it's killing us, a lot of folks don't know the data. We have 101 people die every day in America from opioid deaths. Every day. That's higher than AIDS epidemic in America. And it's crazy. So on the federal level, we need to do, I want to make sure I do a great job of finding alternative ways to help people manage pain. And also make sure that monies come to places. For example, in Baltimore, right near Baltimore County, on the edge of Baltimore City, there's a place called LifeBridge where they work with people who are addicted to opioids and try to help them transition from not being addicted and dying. We got to make sure on the federal level, and they had a meeting with me last year where, Harry, we get money from the federal government to do what we do. Please make sure they don't cut us. That's what I want to do as a congressman.
We talked to the LifeBridge folks yesterday. To our listeners, we're wrapping up with Harry Spikes, one of the many candidates for 7th District in Congress. We're going to be running these all the way up to Election Day. We thank our sponsors at Fadley's, at State Fair, at Jennings, and Center Maryland for allowing us to bring them to you. Harry, thanks so much for being available, and good luck over the next few weeks.
Oh, thank you. And if I may, I just want to give everybody my website.
Please do.
SpikesForCongress.com. That's Spikes, F-O-R-Congress.com. Go on there. Have a good time. Learn about me and learn about the work that we're doing. And please vote on February 4th, 2020 for Harry Spikes for your next leader for the 7th District of Maryland.
Hey, Harry, great stuff, man. We appreciate your passion as well as your service to our community. Good luck to you in a couple weeks, okay?
You're so kind. Thank you, brother. Take care. Have a beautiful weekend.
You too.
Don't hold my Coppin State banner behind me. Take care. We are the flagship of Coppin State Sports here at WNST at AM 1570. He's Don Moeller. I'm Nestor. We're getting together. We are sitting and having some fireside chats.
We keep getting smarter.
The Maryland 7th Congressional District, that we will have it on the 4th of February, and then again on April 28th, and again in November, so we'll be hearing this all year long. Lots of candidates. We're trying to get to each and every one of them. Reminder, former governor and mayor Martin O'Malley as a part of our Baltimore Positive, as well as our incredible chats from down in Annapolis with the Maryland Hospital Association all coming up, as well as Bobby Zirkin. Lots of stuff. Lots of content at Baltimore Positive.
You know what we should do, Nestor? We should throw out as well. You and I talked about it this morning. People are getting now really focusing on this mayor's race. We've got interviews with all the candidates and more to come, so they can jump in the vault at
Jack
Baltimore
Young,
Positive.
Brandon Scott, Theroux Vignaraja, T.J. Smith, all up there. Mary Washington coming soon.
Mary Miller, Mary Washington coming. So we've got all the candidates coming on. This is your place to find out what's going on and get involved. What'd you say, Nestor? Democracy is not
a spectator sport.
Boom.
I'm not taking permission. And we'll find Sheila, too. Hi, Sheila. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore Positive. He's Don. I'm Nestor. We're back for more right after this.